The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Well, I'm going to start us because I know that we're going to run out of time. First, I want to thank our panelists. They have come here from a long way. And I really appreciate their presence here, and I appreciate all of your presence here. It's so good to see some of the faces that I haven't seen for quite a few years. You know, it means a great deal to us and to me personally. It makes my life worthwhile when I find that what we did together here during that 1 year that you were here, or several years in the case of some of you, was actually remotely useful for you in your future, in your career, and that you feel strongly enough to come back and visit us and contribute to the educational life and intellectual life of the law school, especially sharing your sort of life journey from WCL and all the years that have gone between by coming back and talking to our LLM students. I do hope that you will continue to maintain your sort of connection with the law school, and I personally know that I treasure it. It really, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart, it means a great deal to a teacher who has devoted their life to academia to feel that there's something useful, because you all leave and we never see you. But it's always so wonderful to see, hear back and do status updates. So please keep in touch and tell us what you're up to. And, you know, when you come to town and you want to talk about some new project that you're working on, this is an opportunity for us to learn as well. So please, please do that. And this is one of the reasons why I'm so happy about the panel. The way it's been formed is that we are going to talk about from the perspective of smaller economies. And this is something that we don't do enough in trade. I don't do enough in my trade course, because if you look at any trade textbook, that's not the focus. While the membership of the WTO is predominantly not the big countries, but the smaller ones. And in many ways, many of them have not benefited from the trading system as much as one would think. So that is another thing to for us to talk about. And I said yesterday that I thought that that was sort of the mission of this law school in some ways, is to bring in other voices from places that are not usually commonly heard. For those of you that may be here next Wednesday, we are having also a conference with the Brazilian embassy where you will hear the big guys talk. You have somebody from India, China, EU, and Brazil talking about their. So if you're around on Wednesday, I don't think any of you will be because you have such a busy schedule, and we would welcome you there. The WTO, as you all know, has been and will continue to be, as far as I'm concerned, in a process of finding its mission, its soul, what it's all about. It has become a rulemaking authority. It has become an administrative authority without having the legitimacy of an administrative body, which is sort of one of the dilemmas that it faces. It is also has the legitimacy crisis that's faced by all the other global governance actors. Some recent events that I hope that we can continue to talk about and the questions that are raised, we have a roundtable. And the roundtable, I want all of you to participate. So we'll sit around, hopefully, in a roundtable, if that's possible, or close to it, semicircle. We have a big sort of backlog of cases between U.S. and China now on environmental issues. We have rare earths. We have solar panels. We have the wind farm that was they were not allowed to acquire in Oregon. We have the accession of Russia, which is an unknown sort of out there. When I was there in last summer, 2 summers ago, everybody was welcoming Russia's accession with much trepidation, not knowing indeed what that would do to the WTO system. So we will have to see where all that goes. I am going to briefly just mention that our speakers were going to be in the way that they're sitting, Douglas Alvarado and Mario Pujolas Ortiz and Jose Reyes. They are going to be sort of, we have bookended our Dominican Republic person by Costa Ricans. We are going to talk, you have the bios of all of our speakers in the program, so I'm not going to go through the bios. They have all had distinguished careers. Douglas has worked a lot in the trade remedies area, and I hope he speaks some about that, either now or later. Mario has had opportunity to be at the WTO and as part of sort of representing countries that have been and are smaller economies. And Jose, it's good to have you back here. I feel that it's, and also has had tremendous amount of experience both on the representing their nation in the private sector as well as in sort of understanding the relationship of their countries vis-a-vis the large organizations such as the WTO. So we hope that you will enjoy it. I think that what we are going to, each person, I'm not going to interrupt, we're going to go through and have everybody present for about 15 minutes and then open up for questions. Is that okay, or do you want to stop at the end of every speech? I think we should go through everybody and then open up. Okay. So I'm going to now turn to Douglas, please.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Padre. Before I start, I'm going to ask someone over there to see if I can take the picture, because otherwise I won't have now memory of this.
Yes.
So, thank you. Well, even though my history, a little bit of my history is over there in the document that you all receive, I would like to just talk a little bit about my experience, which is going to be related to this topic. After graduating, I became a public officer in the Ministry of Economy, Industry and Trade during 9 years, where I took part of many negotiation teams in free trade agreements on Costa Rica with Canada, Chile, and many other countries. Also, not only as a negotiator, but as a public officer dealing with trade remedies, with public of domestic industry, with small and medium enterprises, I come here as a private attorney who is concerned about possibilities between asymmetric countries, and I have named it Real Chances for Open Trade, because as a public officer and then as a private practitioner, now I see a lot of potential in the free trade agreement between Costa Rica and China that was implemented last year. And when we think about these two countries, let's see if this works. Well, we have to first start knowing where they are. China is in Asia, and Costa Rica is that small, that green spot in the middle of Central America. I think we better take a closer look to that so we can at least know what it is and not confuse it with a spot ink somewhere over there. As you can see, I mean, there is a big and huge, beautiful country in China, I mean, in Asia, which is China, and this small, tiny country, which is mine. And the question is, can we be useful for them? Can they be useful for us? Can we have, I mean, there are real trade opportunities among the countries? Let's take a look a little bit about the numbers of these key players. China, it has an area of 9,596,000 square kilometers. The population, you know, but 2010 1,339 million people. Their PIB per capita, according to the source that I used, which was a Wikipedia, sorry for the lack of, I don't know, seriousness, maybe central bank would be better, but it is just a way to compare it then with Costa Rica, $4,000 per year per person. The index of human development located in the position 101, and they have a total PIB of $5.88 billion as the second country in the world. Costa Rica, on the other side, only 51,000 square kilometers. I cannot do the math of how many times has Costa Rica been in China, but I know that it many times. Our population is only 4 million people. So 4 million against 1,400. However, even though we have index of human development, nice, we are in the 69th position, our PIB is exactly in the same proportion of our population and area, but we have a PIB per capita that is a little bit higher, or at least similar to China. So I believe if we think on those things, at least there can be some interesting opportunities for trade. Obviously, we're not going to make China richer, but in terms of going on political relations, Costa Rica may be used as an interesting base for investment and extending the China investment to Latin America, setting up a base, and then creating industry there from where they can start exporting. Okay, so the question again is, China and Costa Rica and free trade agreement, can David and Goliath be friends? Well, we have China on one side, a very interesting culture, a very huge economy, and exporting a country every day, exporting more and more, and expanding a economy. What are the existing obstacles right now from Costa Rican point of view? Well, first of all, definitely the geographical asymmetries in terms of they are huge, we're tiny, that's something that nobody can just erase with a hand. The market dimensions are completely opposite. I mean, if the country asks for example, to supply the demand of any kind of goods sectors, we will only be able to supply the demand for a very small proportion. I mean, we cannot supply, for example, coffee for the whole China. There will be not enough products in Costa Rica to supply the whole demand that 1,300 and something million of people has. So that means that we may start thinking on very precise market areas in which our exports can be successful. Definitely, there are cultural obstacles like the language and the different legal traditions, but now that we are both members of WTO and we have a free trade agreement, at least we have some legal standards among us. But that is for international trade. But remember, who exports? Who are the exporters and the importers? They're not the governments. Our people are just traders, are businessmen. So when a businessman start thinking of, well, should I go to Peking and look for something to buy and bring here and maybe transform and export to the Central American region or to the States or to other countries? What should I do? How do I get there? What is the name of the city that I should visit? Well, all those distances, all those immense, enormous situation between population, culture, and things is something that the Costa Rican must break in their minds. And especially this is going to be not only for Costa Rica, but also for any businessmen in a developing country where we're not used to, or at least we're not teach how to export. Maybe in developed countries or in Europe, you will have a whole tradition of exporters. And when businessmen study universities, there will be inform, or at least the classes or the culture involve a thinking of an exporting culture. And in developing countries, because we are a small country, now the ones that are here in the table today, not only are small, but also we are developing countries, developing economies, who are not very well exporters, not because we don't have what to export, but maybe because we don't know how to export. And when we face free trade agreements like this one that might frighten anyone with this kind of dimension that I'm telling you, it might create a commercial aversion to the poor possible quality of products, the low price of the products. That's one of the main concerns of the domestic producers. Also, the possibility of existing counterfeit products or unsafe or unhealthy conditions on products. This, but we should know that this is not true for the whole China production, because China produces the whole wide of qualities, from the very low one to the very high one. The problem is that businessmen usually go and try to take advantage of the lowest price because it's going to provide you with the highest benefit. That's their thinking. So at the beginning, the first years of Costa Rica started trading with China, we saw a lot of junk in our market. Very low price goods, very low quality. Those were junk. And then people started started to have an attitude of not China product, not China product. But then the businessmen realized that they have to look for other types of quality, and we started importing better quality products. And well, that's something that the consumer must be taught about the possibilities of a very big market. Counterfeit products. Well, in Costa Rica, everything that comes from China at the beginning, and this is not me, that's the way that the people, the consumers, think about something coming from China. They normally think that it might not be original. But then, again, the consumer started to gather information, and the businessmen started to provide with documentation that shows that China also exports original products. Okay? So those are the cultural issues that has to be break during the years. Those issues that I'm mentioning created in Costa Rica restrictions to exports. I should say Costa Rican restrictions to China exports. The problem is that they want sometimes to use or even abuse of technical barriers to trade. We are under a lot of political pressure of the domestic industry that probably would create those abuse of technical barriers of trade, endangering the Costa Rican position our multilateral organizations. Then we're concerned about valuation problems and customs, because sometimes we have detected that the value is not exactly the correct value, but that happens with goods from all over the world. The problem is that to set up a value in China, to realize if that value is normal, if it is correct, is a hard task for the administration authorities in Costa Rica, for customs authorities in Costa Rica. Well, going back to Costa Rica, so what does Costa Rica has to offer or think in this thing? What has been the relation up to now? As you can see, this is the statistics of Costa Rica trade exchange with China from 2000 to 2011. It was very, very poor during the first 5 years, and then after 2006, it started to expand. These years, 2006, 2007, we can see how much we were moving from this point to this point. Well, even though, remember, we are in tiny markets in terms of Costa Rica, but, well, we just move, we will double the exportation from 2005 to 2006, and they continue growing. Something happened here in 2010 and 11 that our exports went down. I will say that probably it will be consequence of the crisis on 2008 and 9 that affected our exports to China. However, the numbers by 2012 are showing that we're coming back to the levels of 2008 and 9. The importers continued buying a lot of things from China, which give us a negative balance on our trade exchange with the country. However, I can say that China has become the second most important partner in terms of trade. If we ask what are we importing, what are we exporting? Okay, imports from China include cell phones and cell phone parts and accessories, wheel toys, switching and routing apparatus, shoes, and computers. And you can see the participation on this. Here is something interesting. You can see this is after this number 7 and so on, we will have just 1%. This means that imports from China are very diverse. Are very diverse means that there are a lot of different things that are coming from China, not an important group of export. What happened the opposite in Costa Rica, where our major exports, 71% of exports are microprocessor chips, computer parts, connectors, power electrical points comes to 7%, and then Citrix, wood, copper, and leather start lowering to 1%. What does this mean? This means that we are exporting a lot of computer parts to them that has a name. The name is Intel, who has a plant in Costa Rica. Well, from that, I can say that we have to start looking for new options in the market. Now, how can we build a bridge through the Pacific Ocean? We have to explore of possibilities for customer companies into the Chinese market. We have industrial products to export. We have a space technology to gather investment and agricultural specialties. When you talk about industrial products, I talk something like Intel, as I was saying. We have around 10 or more years, like 14 years of having Intel plants. So many of the microprocessors that are in this room might have been produced in Costa Rica. Space tech, what I'm talking about. This guy is Franklin Chan Diaz, who is a Costa Rican, a former NASA astronaut, who is developing the plasma motor who's going to take the man into Mars in the coming future. We are developing a space technology in our laboratories in Costa Rica, and that provides us with the possibilities to get a very high-tech technology and investment in our country. And that is happening over there. And at Astra, which is the company of this scientist, is an opportunity for other surrounding companies related to that area of science to come and invest and develop a business opportunity in the country. Agricultural specialties. These guys, well, you don't look them very well, but they are growing remolachas. How do you say remolachas? Beets? Well, but this is something that grows inside the earth, and it is purple and beets?
Yeah, that's
beets, okay.
Very good right?
Yeah, it's very good. Has a lot of iron and names. Well, my mom always asked me to eat it, and it wasn't until I get old that I realized about the importance. Anyway, they are planting organic beets. So when I was talking about looking for specific markets, we can work on, we're working on certain specialties of agriculture that can provide us with business opportunity, but very specific with agricultural products with added value. Fair trade market, well, maybe China is not going to worry much about fair trade market. That is more like an European and a American style, but organic things or very high quality. For example, our coffee, even though I enjoy Brazilian and Colombian coffee also, our coffee is sold at a very high price because of the high quality that I can achieve. Well, however, in order to get well use of these fair trade agreements, government has to support and help with logistic and trade facilitation, and Costa Rica must focus on a specific regions and cities. I mean, if we can make a strong relation with just one small city, we will probably will have the double of our whole population. I mean, we can think about China, not a whole 1,000 million people country, but maybe a specific region. And we can focus on some region, on some area. But it's important to facilitate the networking to the businessmen. It's important to achieve a very good logistic assistance. We need the help of the government to intercede on regulation, technical regulation like sanitary and phytosanitary regulation, technical barriers of trade, because we have to just overcome all those regulations that exist already in China. And then we need help on market analysis, because without market analysis, again, I have a very nice farmer with a very good product, but he doesn't know where to go. And then the step three is to develop mutual investment, setting up a permanent commercial presence. As I was saying, Costa Rica can be the land for new companies coming to develop new products and new technologies in Costa Rica and make them Costa Ricans so they can export them to all the region and Latin America and use all the free trade agreements that we already have. So that's the way that we are thinking. However, it's important that in Costa Rica we get local labor plus technology, plus tech sharing. And in China, we have to look for mutual alliances with local corps. Okay, that's the scenario for that. And now, what are the direct contracting obstacles among companies? Okay, 2 minutes. Something happened here. Okay. Normally, we're going to have problem with volumes of production on demand. Probably we're not going to be able to satisfy a very huge demand, so we will have to take care of how much production can we achieve. Payment, setting up a financial relation is going to be hard because the distances, the cultural issues, we will have to overcome cultural aspects, like, for example, how we're going to define failure of compliance, a lot of preview difficulties that the business relation is going to have. And then, obviously, defining a legal framework. However, that's the less important issue for the businessman is the most important issue for the attorneys. The road ahead, China has shown a strong interest to use Costa Rica's exporting local platform. Market for goods and services are waiting to explore new options. Free tax productive zones are generating expectation on both sides. As a matter of fact, we are working government to government to establish mutually beneficial productive areas. And then, again, we have to work on selection of particular markets and qualities. So, again, the question stands, can David and Goliath be friends? And that's something that we may discuss during this. Thank you very much. And there is my email in case you want to contact me later on. Thank you.
Okay, good morning to all. My name is Mario Pujols. I am from the Dominican Republic. I would just take 15 seconds to say that back in 1999, when I first heard Professor Alai talk about anti-dumping, I said, what on earth is she talking about? I have to say that I was interested in her class because a very not well-kept secret in the Dominican Republic was that we did not did things properly when we entered into the WTO. And that meant that we needed to negotiate a little waiver that would cover the trade of agricultural products, some important agricultural products in the country. And that happened in 1996. So when I came here in 99, I wanted to study trade to maybe see if I could be of any kind of help in the future for the country. And I was very happy to see that at least everything that I learned in Professor Alai's class has come very handy in my professional life. So I thank her very dearly for that. So what I'm going to do is that I'm going to talk about really quick on the commission. I am part of a commission that kind of was created by law in 2002. And although, as it happens in developing countries, no one was interested in the law itself for a couple of years. You must know that my country started first signing free trade agreements in 1998, and we did so with Central America, five countries, Costa Rica, Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, and the Caribbean community countries. And this law in 2002 basically mirrors WTO agreements regarding anti-dumping, subsidies and countervailing duties, and safeguard measures. For us, as an institution, our relationship with the customs authority is of the utmost importance because whatever we decide could just be a piece of paper, written on a piece of paper, if customs doesn't apply it when the goods get into our market. Our decisions are subject to judicial review by a technical court in the Dominican Republic, but not trade with trade knowledge. So all of our decisions, all of our investigations, which I'm going to talk about in a few minutes, have been subject to judicial review, but we have tried to keep their review framed on the fact that we observed properly the rules stated in the law, because we didn't want the tribunal or the court to do the job of the commission to determine if it was really damaged to a particular sector in the country or if the tariff applied as a safeguard was properly calculated. The commissioners were elected in 2008 for 4 years, so any day now the commissioners will change. I would like to be re-elected, but that depends on many, many issues. But I'll let the ILSP know what happens with that. Our constraints budget, it's something that agencies like ours in developed countries don't have to worry about. We don't have budget to travel to Geneva every 6 months to attend the committees. The committee meetings that take place during a week in which all the anti-dumping and subsidies and safeguard measures discussions take place. And it's kind of difficult for us not to do that, because that is where you kind of learn how to do and how not to do things. So that's the best practical training you can get, and we are not taking advantage of that. The information, the statistical information needed to proceed with our investigation is difficult to get. Customs has it, but we are not 100% sure of what they're giving us, so we need to compare it with other offices in our country. And sometimes we have also taken into consideration, for example, USITC's database to see if at least the amounts equal to what we have been given. And lack of understanding of the issues that we have to deal with, particularly in the government sector, the public sector. It feels like every time we need to open an investigation, there's a lot of explaining that we need to do, and we believe that it falls into not interested ears. What are our expectations? Well, to remain an independent institution and try to not make it a political one based only on technical decisions. And of course, the promotion of efficient statistical info. So these issues also come in handy when you are negotiating free trade agreements. When we sat with the Americans, because the DR-CAFTA, even though it includes five Central American countries, the Dominican Republic and the US, we negotiated it during a three-month period, because Central America had already signed it and the Dominican Republic didn't want to be left out for all the foreign investment implications that that could have. So we negotiated in 3 months. There was not much that we could do or much that we could negotiate, because everything was already there. It was like one of those cell phone agreements that you have to sign in order to get service, something like that. So the DR-CAFTA has a chapter, a trade defense chapter. It includes anti-dumping and subsidies and countervailing measures. But in those particular issues, they kind of include a writing in which everything is dependent on how negotiations on those two agreements go on the WTO. So it's like a direct link to what the WTO says on those particular issues. In regards to safeguards, that's where all the job and all the work is put into. But you need to understand that in free trade agreements such as this one, there are two different kinds of safeguards. The global or multilateral safeguards that, you know, have to do with the WTO. Every country has the right and keeps the right to apply safeguards based on the WTO agreements. And there are also bilateral safeguards, those that should be applied within the framework and within the limits, very strict limits in the case of the DR-CAFTA, as you will see, of a certain agreement. CAFTA says that the application period of a safeguard should not be more than 4 years. Just compare, the WTO for developing countries could take that time up to 12 years, depending on 4 plus 4 plus 2, just in case, 10 years, just in case the situation of the economy of a certain country and so on. The application is only possible through tariff increase. You know, the WTO gives you other options. And once applied, a safeguard cannot be reapplied. That's what the bilateral safeguard provisions included in the DR CAFTA state, and I can clearly say that I don't foresee anyone using those bilateral measures. And as we have seen so far, even countries within the DR CAFTA members have decided to go to the WTO to determine what to do with a certain investigation. We also signed a free trade agreement with the European Union, with the European Community. It's called Economic Partnership Agreement. And we sat along with Caribbean countries, English-speaking Caribbean countries, as a CARI forum, as a forum of Caribbean countries. And we sat and negotiated with the Europeans. As I said, the provisions on anti-dumping and subsidies and countervailing measures are also linked to what happens in the WTO. The good thing, and this is something that I always like to highlight when I'm comparing the Economic Partnership Agreement and the DR CAFTA, is like the different intention of negotiation that the other party had. You can see that when talking about multilateral safeguards, the European Union decided that they will exclude imports from CARI forum states from the impact of any multilateral safeguard that they apply. This is only going to take place for 5 years, but it's extendable. It requires the Joint Council of the Agreement to sit down and decide if it's necessary to extend it, and that's probably going to happen. But that means if the European Union applies a safeguard based on a process followed in the WTO, they would immediately exclude imports from the CARI forum states of its application. So that speaks very eloquently of the EU. In terms of bilateral safeguards, the application could be 4 years plus four additional years if it's necessary. Application not only through tariff increase but also through quotas, and reapplication is possible only after a year has passed. So you can directly compare how the negotiations with the Europeans and the Americans took place. There is also a special safeguard, and this is just incredible. And I also include it because it's WTO plus. It goes so much further than what the WTO frames and what developing countries really expect in any kind of negotiation. It says, and I quote, this type of safeguard is possible when European Union imports cause or threaten to cause disturbances in a sector of the economy, particularly where these disturbances produce major social problems or difficulties which could bring about serious deterioration in the economic situation of the importing party. So you can clearly imagine that anything could, I mean, any kind of disturbance, a protest, some sort of economic situation going on in a country, then we could use this as a way of, you know, protecting our industrial sectors and so on. So going into the practical aspects, what have been our investigation cases so far? We've dealt with dumping and safeguards. We did have a situation with El Salvador, and I do have good friends in El Salvador, but we had a situation in which there was an export promotion law that they were applying, and it kind of gave them a 6% drawback to all the exports that were directed outside Central America. That meant that everything they exported to the Dominican Republic was, you know, they could obtain a 6% drawback, and we noticed that that was a prohibited subsidy according to the WTO agreements. So we started to, you know, negotiate with them on a friendly basis so they could modify that law and put it into conformity with the WTO agreement. They were supposed to, in 2005, they were supposed to not remain, not keep the application of the law. Then we noticed in 2008 what was happening when we came into office, and we discussed the issue for about 2 years, because we didn't want to start a consultation and a panel and so on. And then by the end of 2010, El Salvador eliminated the law. So I think that's something that we at least did correctly. Other investigation cases that we've had, dumping hot steel rods. I think every trade defense authority in the world has been at least involved in a case related to hot steel rods. And that was against imports from Turkey. And they've kept telling us that they were going to take us to the WTO, but we're still waiting. We do understand that we have a very, very good case. So let's see what happens with that. In terms of safeguards, the private sector in the DR just went crazy with safeguards because they thought, well, this is the shortest agreement out of the three. It's the one with the least amount of pages. But I would now say that it is the most complicated one. The most complicated one because, as I'm going to mention in the next slide, there is a particular thing that they talk about that is impossible to do correctly, and we'll get there. So we've applied safeguards to imports of toilets and lavatories from China, toilet paper from Central America, socks, glass bottles, and polypropylene bags and tubular fabric. That polypropylene bags is the one that you use to move rice and beans and other stuff. So what happened with this case? In March 2010, we decided to implement a 38% tariff to the imports of polypropylene bags for 200 days. In October 2010, a definite measure was decided, subject to a phase-out process. We understood that the sector could use just 18 months to help as a protection and then move on. So from October to April 2011, the 38% applied. Then in April, it came down to 28%. In October to 14%, and then in April 21st to 0%. This is a date that I would like you to note, April 21st. So what happened? We went to the WTO, Costa Rica, and all the other Central American countries, which is kind of becoming a trend, five against one, and just from a political and press point of view, that immediately kind of puts you in a disadvantage because five against one, then someone is clearly doing things wrong, and it's regretfully the Dominican Republic. But let's see. I mean, from a press point of view. So Costa Rica was concerned about certain aspects of the investigations and the measures applied, so they requested consultation in October. The panel was established in December. In February. It was composed in March. The final report was circulated in January 2012. And in March, at the dispute settlement body meeting, the Dominican Republic agreed to put the measure into conformity. That means erase the safeguard immediately or before April 30, 2012. Remember that the measure was decided to be applied until April 21st, 2012. So finally, what was learned? This is my last slide. First of all, the unforeseen developments. That's something that is included in the Article 19 of the GATT, which is linked directly to the safeguards agreement, and that is impossible to do correctly. As we have learned, nobody that has applied a safeguard has been able to properly defend it and win it in the WTO. The case has still, that case has still to come. And we can talk a little bit about unforeseen developments in the roundtable later on. The time of application of a measure, that is important. That's what we did. I'm not saying, I'm not talking about the merits of the measure, but we decided that it was going to be applied until April 21st, and then we negotiated with the WTO that it would be applied until April 30th. We got an incredible pressure from the private sector, both on the DR and the Central America. Both governments were just going crazy at each other. particularly the Costa Rican government and the Dominican Republic, with press releases that were, harsh. But what was learned is that we acted as in order to protect jobs. That's what we did. The company did not close, and we helped creating jobs because a Central American company decided to invest in the Dominican Republic and create more jobs after this particular measure. And I just wanted to say a couple of things about the Advisory Center on WTO law, but I'll leave that for the roundtable discussion. Thank you very much.
Hello, everybody. I'm Jose Reyes from Costa Rica also. I just want to say something that 5 years ago, no, 6 years ago, because it was in August 2006, I was at the Maryland at this time, scary for the first test. You can guess who was that test. I was scary. I said, everybody was saying it's very difficult, but you know, it was very helpful having a professor like Ali. It really helped me to confront real life. So thank you very much for your help. I'm going to talk not about statistics. I'm going to talk more or less about how our country, it's always like trying to get free trade agreements with big countries like the United States, how this helped Costa Rica, and how the free trade agreement was in some part in Costa Rica at some point were difficult to approve it, and why it takes so long. Free trade agreement, DR CAFTA was signed in 2004, in Costa Rica, getting to enforce in 2009. So 5 years, I believe it has been one of the free trade agreements that really caused a lot of difficulties in Costa Rica, because it went from people that want it and people that doesn't want it. Some people has reasons, some of them doesn't. But I was in the part that I really liked the free trade agreement because it really helped Costa Rica. Let me see. I'm going to talk specific 3 points: the time frame, implementation of the law, enforcement of the law. Why implementation of new law and enforcement? As you can see, well, Douglas and I will use both just to show you again. The United States, Costa Rica. You cannot see it.
You should borrow my magnifying glass.
Yeah. So in my presentation, I don't have the magnifying. But as you can see, again, it's a huge country. We are a very small country. In terms of territory and populations, we cannot compete with the United States. But what happened to Costa Rica? That the free trade agreement really help or not? So we're going to see it, and that will be my conclusion. So the time it takes to approve CAFTA: lack of efficiency, political control, industry control, or national discussion. I will say at the beginning it was more of all of this was political aspects that were discussing. Some people at the Congress didn't want it, approve it, and the others. And then when it was almost ready to approve, elections come. So nobody want to touch because we are going in elections. So this will be an issue that nobody want to play. So industry control, I would say no, it wasn't that a strong national discussion. After we have the discussion at the parliament or the legislative power, and they didn't get into agreement, they found out the way to say, I'm not going to be making the decision, you Costa Ricans are going to make the decision. So we went into a referendum to approve CAFTA. So the referendum was basically, if you want the CAFTA, you say yes. If you don't want it, you say no. So finally the decision came through and everybody says yes. It was 68% that want CAFTA, dear CAFTA. And what was the important for Costa Ricans? I would say in the area where I practice, for me, with CAFTA, is starting access to the national market, access to the technologies, access to competition, and law reviews, and, you know, amending of the laws. Open markets. Before CAFTA, Costa Rica used to have only one company that provides services and cell phones and home phones, and it was very difficult because if you want to go into a market that is close to competition, a businessman doesn't want waiting for a phone 3 months. I couldn't be talking like this because I would say, well, it's a bad Costa Rican, but that was the reality before CAFTA. Sometimes you have to wait in a waiting list, sometimes up to a year. What happened after that? Now in the market is three companies, they have to compete each other, and now you go and you just get your phone, at it is everywhere. With CAFTA, that was one of the requirements. Amending law. Well, we have to amend a lot of laws, which I believe didn't happen with other three free trade agreements. Why this requirement was in CAFTA and not in others? Well, I believe because of the sophisticated way of doing business in the United States, that was the point, the important point. Okay, we must have this open markets on telecommunications, open markets and insurance, and laws that will provide it the investors' security. I will say that was possible. In which of the laws we were doing very strong changes? Copyright law was one of the ones that really was changed. And that's applied also to the government, because after that they have to use only software that was approved by the government. And then for me, the most important I'm going to say, it's the new laws that we have to implement. One of these laws that have come through after CAFTA, it's the International Commercial Arbitration Law, that even though we have before a law, but it was very weak for the international market. Why? Because the law that we have before, it was only applied for Costa Rican arbitration. And what happened there is that nobody was allowed to practice in Costa Rica arbitration because the law says that you must be registered to the Costa Rican bar. And so that make the Costa Rican market very difficult for arbitration at that time. With trade, nobody want to go to the courts. General, if you have a dispute resolution, you will go to arbitration, which is the faster way to resolve the dispute. So with this new law that implemented in 2010, now it's open to the international arena. Why? Because now the law, it's based on UNCITRAL law that we adopted in 98% of the original. So that means that if you are going to do business in Costa Rica, you will have the opportunity to do arbitration in Costa Rica, knowing that the arbitration law is the same law that UNCITRAL has provided as a model. And then the insurance market was the other part that, from my point of view, had been working very well, because when they opened the market, before also we have only one company, it was a state company, it was a contradiction between the constitution and the, because our constitution said that nobody can have a monopoly on something, but the state was the one that had the monopoly on telecommunications, on insurance. After CAFTA was signed and approved by the legislation, this went away. So now it's an open market that we are really enjoying, because we have now not only Costa Ricans, also people that are coming to Costa Rica to do business. They have the opportunity to choose between one or another company. And telecommunications, I have been working in this area for almost 3 years with one company from, they have some investment in Costa Rica. And the, right now, even though this has been one of the most difficult open markets for Costa Rica, because they were not prepared at the time. When they opened the market, at some point we were like, nobody knew what's going on with telecommunications. It took almost 2 years after the law was approved to the companies to get in Costa Rica. And now, I will say, because the law was amended in 2008 and the market was opened in 2011. Because that time, even though today, the institution, that the entity that have to regulate, it's in difficulties because they don't know how to regulate the markets. It's something new for Costa Ricans. Before, they didn't have to regulate the space or frequencies. It was just one company, and they were the ones that were doing everything. And right now, it's they have to take control of the frequencies, how the communications is going to go through. And this is one of the difficulties that we have right now, because at this point, there are some companies that doesn't know how much it's going to be the royalty that they have to pay to the government. Sometimes they come with some amount of money that is outrageous, because, you know, it's like, how come I'm going to pay this amount if my business only produced to X amount? And then start the fighting against the government, because they are the ones that are imposing that royalty. Saying that, nobody knows sometimes what is going on in developing countries, because we are not a very important country. Like, to do business in Costa Rica sometimes is difficult. So, but it is important to let you know that we have now a market with the CAFTA that really give the investors, really give the people, the business people, a security in the terms of laws, or I would say a forum to do business in Costa Rica. From my point of view, CAFTA right now, I'm just somebody from Costa Rica sent me, and also Douglas told me, when I was preparing my presentation, it was a myth in Costa Rica that CAFTA is not going to work at all. And after 5 years, let me see if this go. That was done by the one of the most important newspapers in Costa Rica on Saturday. They said that since CAFTA was approved until 2010, our exports to the United States grew up. Means that if it is working, and the people that at the beginning says no, we don't want CAFTA, or today is saying yes, it is working. And for me, my point of view is, a free trade agreement is not good, it's not bad. It depends how the country manage your import or exports. If your people in Costa Rica is not working to export, of course, it's going to be bad. It's going to be bad for the country because nobody is doing the exports. But if we only import, that will be the problem. So that will be all. Thank you.
Thank you. Actually, that's a good point to end. One thing that struck me is how unique is Costa Rica? I mean, you do need to have intel. I mean, you have the ability to have the people and the technology to actually have those exports. I mean, I'm just comparing across countries that I have represented in the past, so smaller countries that maybe don't have that capacity. How does it work with them, for them? The other thing that I want, so we wanted to maybe discuss about some of what may have worked in the region but may not work in other regions, supposedly. Then also I was going to ask, what about it's if these regional arrangements are working so well, what do we need the WTO for? It seems to me, I mean, we have the spaghetti bowl problem, right? Because we've got all these regional arrangements out there that have got their dispute settlement, they've got arbitration sort of mechanisms, but we at the same time we have WTO plus, I think Mario mentioned. And it's very clear that the great, you know, whose interest is it anymore to have a multilateral system that's working? Because it seems to me that for the United States and then these big economies, maybe it's working well, or maybe I always thought that for them it didn't matter if the multilateral system fell apart. It doesn't seem like there is political will, at least not in Washington. I don't know if there is in the European Union, to sort of move things around in the multilateral system. But I always thought that for the smaller countries that the WTO system was the better way to go. But from what I hear from you, these bilateral arrangements are also working well. So I guess we can talk about it both in terms of the reality of what's out there. I mean, nothing is happening on the multilateral, and the need for these regional arrangements, and because the big powers, big markets are pushing for them. But how do we see it working out, and how are all these systems going to sort of, is there any MFN anymore in terms of the WTO system, the fundamental basis of the whole thing, which is we do this multilaterally with all these, as I said, you talked about China and Costa Rica, you talked about U.S. and Costa Rica, and I think you all sort of talked about the regionalism, how useful it is for small countries to band together, DR and CAFTA, and of course the trade remedies is another sort of interesting problem, because you have got regional arrangements that have got their trade remedy regimes, and now we have got a multilateral system that has got a trade remedy regimes, and I know that the developed nations don't want smaller countries to take on or any developing countries to take on really the trade remedy regime and system, but it has, you know. So there's a lot of overlap. And how does it work for the businesses? I mean, what is the future? I'm a fan of the multilateral system, but it's clearly not where things are happening, at least not from what I'm hearing from any of you. So I don't know if I don't want to take time. I think we started late, so we can go for another 10 minutes and then continue with this conversation during our roundtable. Yes.
Well, I just wanted to say something really quick. I think that the private sector in the Dominican Republic is more open towards solving any kind of issues in the framework of the WTO. I would personally believe that the statistics clearly state that we have not been benefiting from the bilateral free trade agreements that we have signed. The one that we signed with Central America is something of a hot issue in the country because of apparently we have not been successful in remaining competitive and taking advantage of the provisions and the benefit of that particular FTA. Apart from the fact that Central America had been exercising, let's say, trade among them for 40, 50 years, and they do have experience trading amongst each other. And for the Dominican Republic, after being kind of closed for decades, opening up from one day to the other has left scars in the private sector. scars and terror towards anything related to this kind of agreements. The one that we signed with the U.S., the DR-CAFTA, you just saw how the provisions are, well, mortifying the private sector. And we are looking towards the Economic Partnership Agreement with the European Union as a positive bilateral instrument, but we are still waiting to see how that goes. There are some institutional aspects that need to be created and taken care of within the CARIFORUM region, and that has not happened yet. We Caribbeans tend to take things very slowly, ones more than others, but that is still into the future to see if really a free trade agreement is beneficial for a country. We believe that the EPA is going to be beneficial because it's very development oriented, as you saw in the provisions that I mentioned. But this being the second time with the polypropylene bags case that I was mentioning, the second time that the DR has been using the WTO dispute settlement provisions. The first one was also against Central America, Honduras this time, but five against one, the thing that I mentioned before. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's just something that apparently is being repetitive, and at least we start to learn from experience. And there is nothing wrong about the WTO on trade remedies, particularly speaking, and you should not be afraid of going to that forum to solve your conflicts. Thank you.
As Mario says, well, not all the trades sometimes are like the DR-CAFTA. For Costa Ricans, the free trade agreement that we signed with Mexico, it was a disaster. It was our first experience. People wasn't negotiating that well. And if I'm wrong, Douglas can correct me, but when Mexico came to Costa Rica, it was like a lot of small businesses went out because of these companies coming into the country, because we didn't negotiate very well. And that was, I will say, our mistake. When we went into the next negotiations, it was with Chile, with Canada, and the United States. At least we have the experience from Mexico, and then we didn't make the same mistakes. So I would say that was part of not having experience going into also a big country like Mexico. So it's like sometimes we want to play with the bigger players, but we don't have enough experience. So of course we were hurt at the beginning, and then with experience, well, I think that we had advanced. Why do you ask?
Well, I believe that it's a matter of political view in terms of how you're going to handle the relation between your country and the other country. And I believe that from a political point of view, it will, at least negotiators feel, or at least the political authorities, are more aware in terms of FTAs under Article 24 and as a possibility to establish a whole body of regulations that is going to be comprehensive of all different matters. In Costa Rica, at least, when we talk about economical integration, we talk about free trade agreements of first generation, which were before WTO, before 95. Then second generation, that will be before, after 95, before 2000. And we talk about third generation of FTAs, which ones have been work on in a more professional, if you can say professional, on a more detailed basis. And I believe that having all the rules in a free trade agreement is what at least politicians, or the ones in charge of taking that political decision to how are we going to face economical integration or future trends of business, are more like into a whole FTA. I don't say that the other options are not as well as they can be, but definitely Costa Rica has been in the road of FTAs. They have helped a lot in terms of what benefits can I get, or can small countries as Ecuador or other ones in Latin America or in Africa or in other regions of the world. I will say that we have to keep in mind that also free trade agreements are a way to obtain raw materials in a better, in an easier way for our domestic production. So when we negotiate free trade agreements, at least in Costa Rica, that we have been doing that a lot during the last years. We are not only have with China, we have also with Singapore. We're negotiating with Colombia right now. I mean, we have tons of FTAs in comparison with our size and with been the foreign trade policy of other countries. I mean, we are in a way of a complete open foreign trade policy. I will say that FTAs will bring, or at least I have the feeling, I'm not the one who's decided if it's going to be FTA or not, but my feeling is that the Ministry of Foreign Trade of Costa Rica will go for that, because it has the feeling or the sense or the perception that even for domestic industry to show a whole group of rules will be more political feasible, more political possible, than the other option that GATT has.
Pablo, thank you for your question. I do applaud what you're doing in Ecuador, because you know, analyzing and studying how to proceed and how to move on regarding trade, because that's an exercise that we have not done in the Dominican Republic. I am a particular critic about the fact that we don't have a trade policy. As a country, we don't have a clear trade policy, and I can personally say, and I would be responsible for that, that we entered into FTA negotiations because of a trend or a fashion at the moment. you know, what we did in 98 with Central America on one side and CARICOM on the other, it was not even negotiated by the same entity. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs negotiated one, and the Ministry of Industry and Commerce negotiated another. So that, from there, you can see that's where problems started to grow. The DR CAFTA just happened. There was nothing much we can do about it. And with the EU, that's where we started to understand that an FTA was much more than just a tariff phase-out chapter or list. It includes other provisions, as Douglas was saying, that kind of sets a clear rules of the game for anyone interested in investing in one of our countries. But after what I've said, we need time to see how the EPA evolves, I believe that my country would be more willing to wait and see what happens, focus more on the WTO. We have already stopped negotiations that had started with Mexico, and I think that we were correct after hearing what Jose said, and Mercosur. You can only imagine what's going to happen to the industrial sector in the DR right after we start getting free imports of everything from Brazil and Argentina and Mexico. So it's complicated, and but I do see in the future, apart from you know, standing on the sidelines of the WTO, free trade agreements with limited reach, which is or alcance parcial, which is something that we have with Panama. And if there are any products that you need to or that you would like to trade, then just enter into some sort of limited reach or limited scope FTA without you know, getting into a situation as the one that we have right now with Central America. Our economies, I would not say complement each other. That's something you should look when you're negotiating. What do they have? What do you have that they need? And not, you know, we have the same things, and let's just battle each other's industrial sectors, and someone will eventually lose. So I would go more on the way of WTO and partial scope agreements. Thank you.
Thank you. Unless there's a burning question and you can't come to the round table, is there anybody? Yes. Can you introduce yourself, sir?
Yeah.
Anyone?
Well, I think, thank you for your question. I think that's what we are waiting to see with the economic partnership agreement that we signed with the European Union, because it has a development component, something that all the other FTAs that we have signed lack. The social implications in a country like the Dominican Republic are just, you know, nobody really cares when you're about to negotiate an FTA. I forgot to say that we also stopped a negotiation with Colombia. Colombia is, your country, is really pushing us to enter into an FTA, but we are kind of afraid of the damage that could do to the industrial sector without, you know, a proper homework of understanding where our economies could complement each other. But what we have tried to do, particularly in the institution I am from, is to try to avoid those social unrest that could come after a particular industry has had to close, and 250, 325, 400 jobs are lost. That's something that we are trying to avoid by using the tools that the WTO puts in our hands.
Anyone else? Yeah.
I would say that for us, as I said at the beginning, Mexico, Costa Rica free trade agreement was one of the, really caused some social problems because some small businesses went out of business because of the power that Mexico has at the in that free trade agreement. I would say after that experience with CAFTA, I cannot say that much because the statistics are not done yet to have like what will be the experience. So I can say at the beginning with Mexico, we really have a social impact. And I would say now it can be mitigated because that was part of the experience that we already have. So I would say, and I hope it will not hurt the social development in Costa Rica.
I was want to start saying that you must remember that a free trade agreement is just a tool. Okay? It's not a guarantee that trade is going to happen, that increase on export or imports are going to be made. Free trade agreement is just a tool that may help businessmen to get into business. But when you think about economic growth versus social development, that is a responsibility of the governments. You may be facing unfair trade competition. You may be facing dumping practices. But you will be facing those with or without the free trade agreements. Today, the market are expanding. Today, the business are going abroad, and they are not waiting for a free trade agreement to exist. Businessmen are looking for possible markets, and not all the time will depend on an FTA. But you are right on the sense that anything related with political, with foreign trade, must have a compensation on social areas, because the social impact, it can be important if the government does not take measure for that. We are also negotiating a free trade agreement with Colombia, and it's going to be negotiated just in four phases. It has been very fast, both countries are very encouraged very committed to finish that by the first week of this coming December. It was negotiated in less than a year. And there are social concerns on industries on both sides. And definitely, we're going to see if that will help to create more jobs or not. But jobs are going to be created or lost with or without the FTA. That's what I want you to remember, because the economical situation will never depend only on an FTA. It will depend on the attitude of the politicians and the attitude of the businessmen, of the ones who are guiding the companies and taking decisions on how to do business.
And of course on the internal political situation of a country, which cannot be underestimated in terms of where we all go. I know that there is a lunch waiting for you in the sixth floor student lounges, but come together and let's have our roundtable discussion. Room 601, it'll be a small room. Everybody will get to participate, and I look forward to that. So we will be there, and I hope you will be as well. Room 601 at 1:30. See you then. Thank you so much to our panelists.